As President Clinton's public opinion ratings continue to rise, pundits keep reminding us it's the economy that matters most to the American people. Today on With Good Reason, we take a look at whether Virginia is keeping pace with the rest of the country. I'm your host, Carolyn Elliott. If our national economy continues at current rates, within 3 years we'll have the longest period of growth in U.S. history. Projections for Virginia are equally solid. Roy Pearson is director of the Bureau of Business Research at the College of William & Mary. His 10-year forecast predicts a 35% increase in wages and salaries here by the year 2007 and 642,000 new jobs in that same period. Not surprisingly, most of that growth will come in high tech. And, not surprisingly, most of it will be in Northern Virginia. We'll talk about this expansion and where it leaves the rest of the state. Dr. Pearson, welcome.
Thank you, Carolyn.
Also here is Stephen Fuller, economist from George Mason University. Professor Fuller is president of the Economic Reporter Online. He's an expert on regional government, which many say is key for Virginia to remain competitive with other states. It's nice to have you here.
Thank you. Good day.
Roy Pearson, a 35% increase in wages and 642,000 new jobs within the next decade. Would this be unprecedented growth in the state of Virginia?
Not unprecedented in percentage terms, but it is strong. It's stronger than the national growth rates. We're looking for statewide income and job growth to be higher than we'll see nationally over the next 10 years, and in each of our major metro areas, too. Northern Virginia, of course, leading in the growth rate and jobs, but also Hampton Roads, Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, Lynchburg, and Roanoke will be growing faster than the nation in the next 10 years.
And what does this mean for the average person? Their spending power, ability to buy a home? Does your forecast call for a significant improvement in quality of life?
You will have the income for a better quality of life, yes. We're calling this next decade the decade of the worker because we're looking for, as you said, very substantial gains in wages and salaries per worker after you adjust for inflation. The growth rate per year in wages and salaries after adjusting for inflation will be about six times what it was, the very meager 3% growth we had in the past decade.
Stephen Fuller, how does this projected growth rate compare with that of other states? The last figures I have are from 1996, when Virginia ranked about 22nd in the nation based on economic strength.
Well, it's a hard question to answer. I don't track the economies of other states very closely, and I'm not sure that they've been watching their economies as closely as some of us have been watching Virginia's. I might add, though, that just to buttress what Roy has said about Northern Virginia, that we're experiencing almost a 6% annual growth rate in the private sector, and labor force growth rate of less than 2%, you can begin to see the squeeze that's going to occur here as this growth rate continues. For years, we've been borrowing workers from west and south. There are people that commute up here from the outskirts of Richmond, and increasingly we're bringing Maryland workers into Virginia to work, just because our economy has been so much stronger than suburban Maryland's in the last several years that the highways are clogged with Maryland license plates. But the question continues to be where the workers are going to come to fill the jobs that are being created. And it's at every level. It's not just the technology-based jobs, which have been very visible. It's from McDonald's to the construction site. And workers here, or businesses here, I should say, are beginning to turn work away or move work out of the region to offices that companies have in other parts of the country. And as we lose work that could be done here, we lose the job growth potential and the income and spending that those jobs would have generated. So there is a sort of a downside risk to all of this good news.
Well, we want to talk about not only how to find the people to fill the jobs, but how the state is doing in keeping up its infrastructure to support all of those new people. But first, let me ask you, Roy Pearson, where are the jobs coming from? Are they primarily high tech?
Well, the phrase I'd like to use right now, Carolyn, is calling it an IT&T economy, where information technology is the leader and that gets the headlines. But there's another T you have to worry about in there, tourism, that we have a competitive edge nationally in tourism as well as in information technology, and that's a growth area for the next decade, too.
Does the state have the infrastructure for this type of job growth that we're talking about, Stephen Fuller?
Well, infrastructure is a critical issue, and it's not just Virginia. It's everywhere in the country that's under these growth pressures or unable to keep up with the transportation, particularly transportation, but it cuts across to other categories of infrastructure, too. And the plans that are in the works and the funds that have been set aside over the next 20 years to support the anticipated growth are nowhere up to the task. And the solutions, even if we had unlimited funding, aren't up to the task either.
And one solution is a high-speed train?
No, the solution is to work, to live closer to where you work and or live closer to where you play and not do so much driving. We drive more during the day. Increasingly, our driving is non-work related, and the rush hour in Northern Virginia never subsides. You can't get ahead of it. 5 o'clock in the morning, there's a rush hour, and at 10 o'clock at night, and weekends are worse. So, it's a behavioral issue. I don't know that we can point to government and say you have to come up with a solution, because that there isn't one that's in the works without a major modification of behavior.
You mentioned on the infrastructure, the transportation. Yes, we have to be able to move the people, move the goods, but educating the population is also an important part of the infrastructure, and that's two-thirds of most companies' costs is the labor compensation. The problem we're facing is with all the new workers we're going to need, there's got to be substantial programs for retraining and enhancing the skills of the existing workforce. You can't fill all those new jobs we're talking about with new high school and college graduates. There's got to be a major effort to create, you might call it, new tech skills in the existing workforce if we're going to be competitive over the next decade.
So when we're looking at this economic forecast for the state of Virginia, which looks very positive, showing a lot of growth in high tech for most of the metro areas, particularly for Northern Virginia, if this state government doesn't do something to address the infrastructure issues, doesn't do something to address the education issues, could we be in a position where we're going to actually lose the potential for this growth, Professor Pearson? Or is
Yes.
it just going to come no matter what?
Well, to get the workers we need, we are going to have to pay workers more. So that's a given. To keep us competitive, we've got to make sure those workers are worth more, that they're worth the higher salaries. To do that, the workers have to be more productive. We've got to see labor productivity increase quite substantially, about at least 1.5% per year over the next decade, or we will not be able to compete. If our workers are not becoming more productive, and yet we have to raise the wages and salaries in order to try to get workers, then we would have to pass on price increases that would put us out of the market.
How much of an influence can something like removing the car tax have on these economic projections? Are decisions like this by a governor sort of a wild card in determining a state's economic future?
Roy, do you want to take that one?
Well, we are talking about substantial income growth for the state. It will be higher than the national rate over the next decade. So, yes, there will be additional revenues coming into the state. So the real question, which is being debated now, is how should we use those additional revenues? Should the public have a tax cut, or should we be using it for additional public services? We have the additional transportation needs. We have additional education needs. Trying to get a balance as to how much to cut taxes, how much to reserve for some other needs is something no one has the perfect answer to. But the
car tax issue is not so much people saying, I want to pay lower taxes. It's really, I think, the voters, not only here, but in the state of New Jersey, where they had a car insurance issue that almost brought the governor down. People are angry that their cars are being attacked by this tax. And in fact, it's people love their cars and they don't want to pay taxes on them year after year. I think it's less of an issue that Virginia residents didn't want to pay their fair share of taxes. They just didn't like this particular tax. And I think my position, and Roy's, yours was as well, although you may have modified this a little bit based on your forecast, that the state can't afford to do without that revenue, and that it can't make up that revenue entirely through growth. That growth is going to generate increasing demands for new services, and if the state's going to stay competitive with other states, and we will have to find new sources that may be more acceptable to the taxpayers to make up for some of the loss in revenue by eliminating the car tax.
When you say new sources acceptable to the taxpayers, it sounds like you're referring to some other kind of tax someplace else.
Yeah. Most taxpayers don't mind paying sales tax or gasoline taxes. They don't notice it. I just bought a tank of gas coming to the studio this afternoon, and I don't know how much tax I paid. And so if it doesn't hurt so much, you don't notice it. When I pay my car tax, I know how much tax I'm paying because I sit there and I write that check all at one time, and it annoys me. You know, if I really want to get upset about it, I could get upset about paying that money year after year. But there are other forms of taxes that are really quite efficient forms of taxes, and that taxpayers don't see the accumulated cost of that over the cost of the year. And so that's, I don't see a new tax. I just see using some of the existing taxes, tax methods that we have, maybe changing the rates a little bit to make up for the loss in tax revenue by eliminating the car tax.
Following up there, Steve, back to the point on taxes, I guess I'd accept it as inevitable we would be cutting something, because you recall a couple years ago the big push was to get rid of the BPOL, the Business Professional and Occupational License Tax, because that was unpopular. And then the argument suddenly switched to let's get rid of the car tax. So I had concluded that we were going to cut something somewhere, whether it was the BPOL or the car tax, that the mood was for some type of tax change. I agree with you, though, finding sources for revenue for public services and our needs is a problem for the future. For example, our retail sales tax is the second largest source of revenue, as you know, to the state. But a declining percentage of people's income is being spent on goods subject to the retail sales tax. They're spending more on services. They're spending more on entertainment and more on travel. So that's eroding the base for the retail sales tax.
This is With Good Reason. I'm your host, Carolyn Elliott. Our focus today, the Virginia economy. You just heard Roy Pearson suggest introducing a new service tax in Virginia. It's an idea that's gaining popularity nationwide. We don't pay a sales tax for the movies, for doctors or lawyers, electricians or plumbers. John Blythe visited a local breakfast joint in Richmond to get some voices from Virginia on this issue.
I do not think that that would be a good kind of tax. I'll admit I've never heard it even proposed, but I think that plenty of elderly people need painters and people to work on their houses. I think that people who are not wealthy need all these services, and I think it would be a very regressive tax. I, too, would prefer to have a car tax.
If Virginia needs to raise tax revenue, would you support a tax on services like those provided by doctors, lawyers, painters, electricians?
No, I don't think I would. I do believe that luxury taxes are maybe the direction to go, but I would think for doctors and lawyers and things like that, you're hitting everybody on what are often essentials.
Well, I would put those in different categories. I would prefer there not be a tax on direct services that are a benefit to the individual in terms of social needs that they have, but not necessarily opposed to a tax on services like painting or electricians or things that are designed for home improvement that are, in a sense, could be a luxury for individuals, not necessarily, but could be.
I'm in the process of redoing part of my house, and I'd rather not pay taxes on painting because I can't do the job and someone has to do it. I'd much prefer to see increased taxes on luxury items like cars, fur coats, I mean, things that are clearly non-essential, to increase the taxes there and get the taxes off of essential items, including food.
So paying someone else to paint your house is not a luxury item?
Some folks might think that it is. Right now, it's not for me.
Joining me are economists Roy Pearson from the College of William & Mary and Stephen Fuller from George Mason University. Roy, Virginians say it over and over again, they can't afford new taxes, even if the money is targeted to education or to infrastructure. Is this an imagined hardship on the people of Virginia?
No, the public was correct. Over the last 10 years, the payroll per job in Virginia barely increased after you adjust for inflation. The real gain was practically zero. So when they were taking their paycheck and trying to spend it by the goods that they wanted to, they found it wasn't going any further now than it was a decade ago.
But you see that changing, no question about it.
See that changing, yes. We are projecting, as Steve was saying too, that the real income, real payroll per worker will be rising much more rapidly over the next decade, that they will feel an increase in purchasing power.
Are there any regions of the state where people are in trouble now and they're going to continue to have difficulty? Stephen Fuller or Roy Pearson, either one of you.
Roy, you look at the state more okay. closely than I do, but I would at least as an opening say that the rural portions of the state still are going to be facing a hard economic times in the coming years, and the metropolitan areas are looking pretty healthy.
I would agree wholeheartedly. The metropolitan areas are where the growth has been recently and where it will be over the next decade. The manufacturing job gains and the private service gains will be in the metro areas. We're predicting the metropolitan area job growth is going to be higher than the state average. All those business services Steve was talking mm-hmm. about, they're located in the metropolitan centers. They're not in the rural areas of the state.
So that's just the continuation of the trend that's been going on for decades. But Stephen Fuller, is there any way around that? Is there anything these smaller communities and more rural communities can do to try to strengthen their economies a bit? And they're the ones being hit again and are very concerned about, they complained about BPOL, they're complaining about the car tax, they're very concerned about their eroding tax base.
It is a continuation of the trends that characterized the 50s and 60s and 70s, that young people that are growing up in Duffield and other communities, very nice communities to live in, are having to leave. They go to college somewhere, they get vocational or technical training, and they go to where the jobs are. And only on occasion do firms locate in these places. I suspect some of these technology firms that are very footloose may very well be encouraged by the lower cost of operation and the hard, the very high quality labor force that is not overworked, not oversubscribed, that exists in some of the rural parts of the state, may very well opt out of Northern Virginia and move down to 81 below Roanoke and find a good location there. They have the fiber optic cables. They don't need, in the satellite hookups, they don't need to be in Northern Virginia.
Has that been happening?
I think there's isolated cases where this has happened, but it hasn't. It isn't a major movement that I know about. Roy, have you seen any of that?
No, there are some individual examples, but it's not a major movement. And you're right, as you're saying, an information technology service company literally can locate anywhere in the world as long as they have the telecommunications capabilities. The question is finding the workforce there that can be productive in that type of employment, which is a big factor.
Let me ask you about some other trends in the state. As you mentioned, Roy Pearson, the manufacturing sector continues to shrink, and you have said that this represents a major success, not a failure. Why?
What we're looking at right now, we're predicting for 98, for example, that there will be increases in manufacturing jobs in all six of the major metros, Hampton Roads, Northern Virginia, Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, Lynchburg, and Roanoke. So we're expecting some turnaround for Virginia in the manufacturing employment, and actually expecting some growth, not very much, but some growth over the next decade in manufacturing jobs, which will be a plus nationally. The jobs are going to keep going down. All the predictions are we'll have continuing decline in manufacturing jobs nationwide. So Virginia, in that sense, is bucking the trend.
Stephen Fuller, President Clinton is banking on a hefty tobacco settlement to bolster his budget, mm-hmm. but such a settlement, at least according to Governor Gilmore, is going to hurt our economy. Is that true, and by how much?
Well, this is, I don't, I don't think it's going to have that major effect on the Virginia economy. I think it's politically appropriate to for the governor to acknowledge that this would impact Virginia more than other states, many other states, because we still have a tobacco industry here. But it's not the key industry. It's not driving the economy. And so I don't think we're going to feel it at the northern end of the state at all, and I don't know that the rest of the state will notice it too much. Roy may have a better view on that than I do from up here.
Well, our Philip Morris, for example, USA, does have a major impact statewide in its production facilities. They, I think, will be still producing for a worldwide market and are very flexible in being able to move into other product lines, too. The ones I worry about are the tobacco farmers, who are generally small businesses and with not as many alternatives, other things that they can move to. So I guess I would be concerned with what would happen on the agricultural side of it more than on the manufacturing side.
But agriculture as a proportion of the economy, when we look at the state economy, agriculture, while not unimportant, has lost importance. And tobacco is just a piece of that. I mean, that may sound uncaring about that, about the tobacco farmer, but tobacco, I mean, it's a crop that Maryland used to have a tobacco crop, and it's about gone, and it isn't the future.
Agree with you, yes. It's not the major product by any means, but I guess what I was implying is out of the settlement, there should be some funds for the part of agriculture that is hurt by that here in the state.
Roy Pearson, sources in Hampton Roads say they are still smarting from defense cutbacks. Has that trend slowed?
We're still predicting continued decreases in federal jobs over the next decade. That the worst of it is behind us, but it's still definitely not going to be a growth industry, and we will see some further declines, which will slow the growth in Hampton Roads. The job growth in Hampton Roads, we're predicting, will be better than the national growth, but still it will be a couple percentage points less over the decade than we will see in the other five major metropolitan areas. And the defense cuts, federal-related employment, is the reason that we expect the somewhat slower growth in Hampton Roads.
Stephen Fuller, the General Assembly has in the past passed rather weak incentives for localities to participate in regional cooperation. Do you see that trend changing, and do we have any regions in the state that are doing a good job of cooperating on a regional basis?
Well, I think the local jurisdictions in Northern Virginia understand that as the pie gets bigger, they all benefit. I've been in the Washington metropolitan area, an observer at least for 30 years, and I'm impressed by how well the business community and the local governments work together to resolve problems and issues and in fact to help grow the economy, which on the outset looks as if it may benefit one part of the Northern Virginia area more than another, and yet they see that this is not a threat to them, and that if Fairfax grows, there are going to be some benefits that trickle down to Prince William County or to Loudoun County and vice versa. So I think they have seen this themselves, and this has made Northern Virginia very attractive to businesses in their choice between a Maryland or Virginia location. Up here, that's a really important contrast between the District of Columbia and suburban Maryland, which are having very difficult economic times, or are, as Maryland is, it terribly underperforming their potential, and the role of government's very important in that as being part of the problem, where I don't see it as part of the problem at all in Northern Virginia.
We're seeing that in other areas too. The Hampton Roads Partnership, for example, is pulling us together, I think, very successfully as a region. We're talking about the cooperation of businesses and university leaders as well as public officials. And it's a regional approach, a regional view that didn't exist even 5 years ago.
But Virginia regions have been slower to develop that way than many other metro regions in the country.
Well, yes, and we can still pull it together more, I think. An interesting example came up. We like to think about having a package tourism ticket, for instance, where you visit Virginia Beach and you visit Williamsburg. Well, it took a while to get that instituted. I saw in the paper the other day where in the international advertising, there's now a joint package of Las Vegas, San Diego, and Phoenix, Arizona, which, needless to say, aren't exactly adjacent to each other. So some other areas, I think, are ahead of us in terms of pulling together, advertising, and working together across geographic areas. But we're moving in that direction.
The American Electronics Association predicts that Virginia will be in the top five technology states by the year 2002. Stephen Fuller, do you agree with that?
Well, I look at this from, again, from the Northern Virginia perspective. We look at the at Northern Virginia compared to other technology centers such as exists in the Boston area or in Silicon Valley and so forth, and we're already in the top five. But the issues are, and these threaten all of the top five, are the availability of workers who are qualified to fill the jobs being generated, the costs of operation. We've talked about congestion and the cost of an inadequate transportation system. That's a player in there. The availability of important linkages to the rest of the world's markets. And I think Virginia is pretty well positioned in terms of ports, airports, and communications. That gives us a leg up on a lot of other major states. And so universities, and so I think there are some challenges that could undercut our position, which is, in effect, ours to lose at this point.
Roy Pearson, if Northern Virginia was lopped off from the rest of the state, what kind of shape would that leave the rest of us in? In other words, how dependent is Virginia on that booming economy in Northern Virginia?
Well, it does account for a large part of our growth, but as we mentioned, the other areas of the state are growing and will grow over the next 10 years at higher than the national rates. So even without, carve out Northern Virginia, just look at the rest of it, we're still talking about above average increases in employment, and more importantly, above average, above the national average, increases in the real payroll that you take home as a worker.
Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Roy Pearson is director of the Bureau of Business Research at the College of William & Mary. He also sits on the Governor's Board of Economists. Stephen Fuller is an economist from George Mason University, and he's president of the Economic Reporter Online. To comment on today's show, you can reach us via email at reason@chev. That's schev.edu. John Blythe is our assistant producer. We had research assistants from Sharon Constance. Evelyn Baylor handles listener services, and Kevin Pacini composed our theme music. This program was produced with the help of WCVE Richmond.
With Good Reason is produced for the Virginia Higher Education Broadcasting Consortium by the State Council of Higher Education and public radio stations serving Virginia. The views expressed are not necessarily those of the consortium or this station. To comment on today's program or to receive tapes or transcripts, call toll-free 1-800-245-2434.